Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, I'd been hosting American Variety for a few years when one day it occurred to me that a pretty high percentage of my guests were people who pursued a difficult or unusual goal or dream, often against tall odds and a lot of resistance and discouragement, but they eventually achieved it. This wasn't a conscious, uplifting moral message on my part of, like, if at first you don't succeed, try again or whatever. It just happened that way. But maybe it reflects the fact that I admire people with gumption who pursue their dreams and their stories appeal to me. So over the years, I've had on many guests of that sort, often artists and performers of various kinds, but also explorers and other adventurers and game-changing scientists and astronauts and creative business people and, you know, just a wide range. I guess that's why I call it American Variety, right? My guest today is one such person. He's a musician named Christian Tambor. And calling Christian a musician is a bit limiting. He is that for sure, specializing in jazz on the vibraphone and piano. But he's also a composer, an arranger, a producer, and a band leader who tours worldwide, performing at major venues like the Lincoln Center, the Kennedy Center, and the Newport Jazz Festival, as well as a musical director who puts on headline shows in places like Vegas. And he's also the CEO of a company that offers musically inspired presentations on leadership and training to corporate teams around the world. In other words, he's a classic entrepreneur, but in a field where that's not too common, music. And when I first ran across him and noticed that he's originally from Central Florida, where I'm from and where many of our listeners are located, that clinched it for me. I had Christian on the show in January 2020 to talk about his career and experiences. But that was before COVID-19 made its rude entrance into the world. It has obviously changed everything, but in some industries more than others. Travel and hospitality are two of those, of course. And entertainment is certainly another industry where the pandemic exploded like a bomb. Welcome, Christian.
Thanks so much, Court. How are you? It's great to be here.
I'm doing well, and I hope you are too. Thanks for being on with us again.
Yes, of course.
Now, that was a long introduction, I know. But I hope that what came across is that you've been an extremely busy guy for quite a while, and were achieving unusual success in your field, across a wide range of avenues in your field, until suddenly things came to a screeching halt. Why don't you just tell us about it?
Yeah, you know, I'm not even really sure how to kind of encapsulate this, but, you know, it kind of went in a couple different phases. You know, so released a brand new project at the end of 2019. And, you know, when we spoke, was really talking about all the things that were on deck for the year, including my projects and other artists that I work with. You know, we're talking about probably 100 performances over the course of the year and multiple production projects that were kind of in the works and traveling to all over Europe and Asia. And so there was a lot of things on deck. Fast forward to March, and it in certain ways kind of was overwhelmingly hit all at once, where it became very clear things were going to start coming to a stop, and started seeing what was kind of this postponement. Nobody wanted to cancel. It was just a postponement. And it started relatively kind of across the board. You know, everybody was pushing out 3 months, you know, maybe 4 months. And then that started to push out even further. And then postponements went to cancellations. And cancellations went to venues no longer even being open. And so it was pretty wild to see so much momentum in one respect stop almost immediately. But then in other regards, die very slowly over a period of a couple of months. So it was emotionally draining. It was professionally heart-wrenching to kind of watch and experience. And yeah, I mean, it was just, I know a lot of other people who are listening to this that are in the industries that you mentioned, saw the same thing happen. So just kind of gripped in and went for the ride.
Yeah, unreal. I mean, like the floor opened up and you fell through. I mean, how did you react initially? Was it kind of shock and disbelief, or, you know, just... Can this really be happening, or is this going to be a fluke that goes for a month? Or
yeah, it felt a little bit like, why is this happening to me, right? And I think anybody who is at least experiencing it on their own feels like it's very much their problem, you know? You know, obviously, as time went on, you realize that everybody's being impacted. You know, I think for me, it was the first time. I mean, there's just so many elements of this, right, to try to unpack, and I'm not going to try to unpack them all here on your show because that would take longer than your show runs. But part of it was just stopping all the creativity.
right? I mean, there's always something to be working on. There's always something to be kind of putting on the date where you're going to. And when you're young and you're a musician or in this field, like traveling or booking shows is kind of the perpetuation of the career, right? You're mm-hmm. hoping that each booking you're doing is leading you to the next bigger and better opportunity. Sure. And to see it all just kind of stop, it left me a bit like, well, now what? You know, and so then it's like more of a waiting game. Well, how long can this really last? And everybody had a different answer. And so, you know, it became very clear that after about a month and a half to 2 months, this wasn't going to be a short-term thing, and that there would have to be some real active changes to find a way to keep the creativity relevant, to keep an income relevant, and to just keep the mind doing, you know, moving forward with, instead of just kind of following into some, you know, deep depression or something like that, which I'm not saying that I didn't sort of do, but a teetering, right?
But let's call it a funk.
Sure, we'll call it a funk. Yes, exactly. It was definitely a funk. So
like, you know, I mean, you described how the cancellations kind of came in a cascading fashion as it mm-hmm. became, you know, more real for people. And, you know, one by one, they were kind of coming to grips with it. But could you plan in any rational way at that point what to do to continue your career in some shadow fashion or some new reality fashion, you know, some new normal? I mean, I bet it was a mad scramble to try to figure out what to do because you're working not just with yourself, but with other performers and venues and, you know, you're kind of in the middle. And what was that like, refashioning your career on the run? What was that like?
Yeah, you know, my one business, Sonic Leadership, which is, you know, where we do a lot of training and using music as, you know, kind of an analogy, and the way musicians work on stage as an analogy for working as a, you know, a high functioning team. We had dabbled in the virtual space because, you know, not everybody would always have the budget to bring a band across the world to go, you know, talk to their 25 member executive team. So we had dabbled a little bit in doing some virtual performances, and it became very clear very quickly that everyone was going to go to this virtual platform of using some sort of online meeting space to continue their business, whether you're in tech or medicine. The trick was with music, because of the technology and latency, there's really no platform that even exists yet or today that allows musicians to all play together at the same time virtually. But we had kind of tackled some of those methods with Sonic Leadership and still being able to do it and it be, you know, an enjoyable experience, not as good as being live. But that was the big pivot. Like, how are we going to still reach our audience and do it virtually and it still not sound like, you know, sound
a
bad?
Jumble.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's a good word for it. A jumbled mess. Insert your words of choice there. Yeah.
Crazy. So how did your interactions with your venues go? I mean, they were trying to stay alive themselves because you are their lifeblood, basically. I mean, they're a platform for you to perform on and entice customers of theirs too. And
right.
So
right.
Did you all put your heads together to try to figure out what to do? I mean, I had already bought tickets to your performance in Venerable Wortham Theater in Asheville, North Carolina. You know, was set to go to that when this crashed. And so they were, yeah, I could see trying to ask ticket holders to put their tickets on hold, and they'd let you know when you could use it and that kind of thing. And,
right.
And then later they gave you the option of just getting your money back. And, you know, so that was a kind of a business cascade of figuring out how to survive for them too. So how did you work with venues? Was it all different or?
Yeah, everybody's different. Yeah. I mean, some venues I know are not open anymore. Some venues just didn't make the shift or didn't have, you know, and it's not about that they weren't able to make the shift. It was they might not have had the financial wherewithal to actually make the shift, right? So
sure.
The Wortham Center is a great example of a venue that they leveraged, you know, the technology and the resources that they have. And I've actually done a show now for them with Shauna Tucker, who's a wonderful collaborator, that we did a pre-recorded concert. We taped it actually at a different theater in a different part of North Carolina. It was a 3 or 4 camera shoot, recorded the concert, and then they were able to present it as a ticketed event for their audience. Now, it was done specifically for that audience, was done specifically for that theater, and was only offered to them. And so then you have other theaters. There's a great theater here in Clayton, North Carolina. And the director there, Scotty, is he just like it's like he didn't skip a beat. You know, he immediately invested whatever resources he had in multiple cameras, the technology to get the internet up and streaming, and just like really high end. And he's one of the few venues that I know that is really hosting a lot of different performances and able to stream them out to various places, not just for his own audience, but for an audience, say, in Arizona at a theater where they have an audience, but maybe their theater, they don't have the ability to turn all the lights on and keep all the stagehands on staff, but they still have an audience that wants to hear music. Well, the Clayton Center's found a way that, you know, for a relatively reasonable rental fee, we can go in, we can set up, and we log in as that other venue, wherever it might be in the world, and we're presenting for that venue. Now, the stage might be located here in North Carolina. And so, but it's, again, this is far and few between. I know there's a lot of people trying to do a lot of different things, you know, the remote pop-up concerts. You know, I just see a mix. And so it's exciting when you see people doing something unique and different to kind of keep it alive. Not everybody's able to do that. So we're just hopeful that, you know, we can turn things back on soon enough and we can get things back to the way, or at least a new normal, pardon the cliche.
Well, it sounds like that guy with the Clayton Center was, you know, creative and had initiative and also had the capital to basically create a new platform. And that was he invented a new thing in the entertainment world. But as you say, not everybody is in the position to do that. So like switching to the other side of it, how do you and your fellow performers and the musicians you support as producer and band leader, I mean, what were those interactions like, people who depended on you to be the platform?
So, you know, as a band leader, yeah, you start to bear that weight of, well, how am I going to keep some gigs going so that the guys and gals can work? Yeah, so part of what we kind of did, or what I had to do, was very similar to what Scotty over at the Clayton Center did. Is, you know, I started to purchase up equipment that I never thought I would need, and cameras and microphones and, you know, mixing boards and digital audio interfaces, so that I could stream or I could produce small scale performances here in my home studio. And also just kind of wrap our heads around the fact that we were going to be moving from doing live music to kind of the equivalent to doing TV, right? That we're now moving into a different type of musical capturing, right? So there's no audience. If there is an audience, it's a virtual audience. So you don't have that interaction, that breath. You don't have that feedback. So wrapping your head around still being able to perform without that feedback was a new hurdle to kind of overcome. How do you program a show when, you know, there's a real thing of virtual fatigue, or, you know, screen fatigue? You know, normally we'd do a 70-minute show, but now 45 minutes felt right. You know, it really kind of took a reevaluation of what do people want, but also what can people handle and what can I afford to create and do. To tell you that it is an ongoing process is the real truth. I mean, we started kind of trying to make the change once we realized it wasn't a short-term problem, April, May. By the time we were kind of trailing into June and July, we were starting to do more of these virtual concerts and leverage the technology. So, you know, that was the biggest thing. It was just like, well, figure out how to reach the people. How do you reach the people? And that in this case means through technology.
Well, we're reaching the people who are listening to American Variety Radio. I'm talking with Christian Tambor, who is maybe it's a little too highfalutin to call you an entertainment impresario, but you're a musician and an arranger and composer and a producer and a band leader and run all those things. And all of that, as we've been describing, came to a crashing halt with the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. And you've had to really quickly retool and configure what you do in your whole career and how you interact with your clients and your performers and your fellow performers. And so, and I know, like you were just saying, Christian, that in all genres of entertainment, the energy from the audience is part of what you pick up on and part of what you feed back. And it's part of what enlivens and invigorates and makes a show. And when you're doing it virtually, you absolutely lack that. Have you had any live performances with a live audience at all during this period?
I have. I've had two. I know. Even that is just...
Two rather than 100 a month or something.
Yeah, earlier. Yeah. I mean, it's just... So I did my... I've done two shows where there was an audience. One was kind of on the east coast of North Carolina at a beautiful museum. And the capacity for that concert was 25 people based upon the space that we were in. It was kind of an invite only. But I want to say that was in September. And it was the first time that we had done a concert, or I had done a concert in almost 7 months, where after we finished a song, there was actually applause. You know, that's not about an ego, like, oh, I need to hear applause because I need to know that people, you know, it's just to know that there's somebody out there listening and that they're alive and they're breathing. And like that applause is just one part of what, as a musician, you're reading during a performance, right? You're reading the breath, you're reading the laughter. If you tell a joke, you're reading all this feedback, even in the middle of a song, from the audience to understand how what you're delivering is landing, right? And you change or you adapt based upon that feedback. So that was the first time, and it was emotional. I don't know how to say it other than that. It's a few times in my career where I've welled up, and that was like, oh yeah, that's what this is. And you realize how much you love, and you know, because I started doing this when I was 13 years old. So you realize how much you love what you do and how lucky you are to call that a career and to be able to sustain some sort of way of life. But then you realize how quickly that can be taken and how, you know, it's not even like, oh, I'm going to change my career, I'm going to do something different. It's just like the entire industry just stopped. And so that little bit of applause, even from those 25 people, it was like, oh yeah, this thing that I do, it's still something. It's still something that's meaningful. And it was very impactful. And so that was a pretty important show. I'll always remember that one.
Hopefully it will come back again pretty soon. But gosh, you know, if you don't mind my asking, I mean, you've described a couple of things that have continued on, and you know, the virtual things and the company that you have where you do a corporate training based in music, and that can still be done remotely pretty much, not as well as it was, but I gather you're still doing that. So, you know, you've got still some income streams, but they're vastly curtailed from what they were when you were going full tilt in January and February 2020. And so if you don't mind my asking, what's your own personal financial situation like? I mean, are you you're not starving, I hope.
Well, I was going to ask for $20 after the call, but no. Okay.
You got it.
All right. Fantastic. This is a paying interview, right? Wait, where's my
PayPal?
Agent? Yeah, exactly. There you go. No, I'm fortunate to, my wife has a job in technology, and her role and her job has only been really elevated because of this whole situation with COVID, that her business has required, you know, even more time and energy put in to make sure that, you know, what she does, they can provide the services that they need to provide. And so, you know, really the only thing that's changed for her is that she's not going into work to the office. She's just doing her work virtually, but her company kind of is the crux of virtual business. And so that has been, you know, really critical for us to kind of keep somewhat of some normalcy here in the financial world here at the house. Great. You know, everything else that I do at this point is very meaningful, but it's also, you know, it's not nearly what it used to be. So, you know, we're just hoping that will level back out again here.
Well, certainly shout out from American Variety Radio to Mrs. Tambor, that's the last name she goes by, and really to all of the other spouses around the country and the world, honestly, who are able to keep the ship going when their spouse is in entertainment or in those other industries that we mentioned that are, you know, dying on the vine here, at least trying to hang on. And so that's a godsend, right?
But absolutely.
But you must know people who've really had a hard time of it, who don't have the good fortune you and some other people do in that regard.
Yeah, and I think there's people that... you know, listen, if there was any moment that I felt like the lights were going to go off or the food was going to stop or something like that, I would stop doing what I'm doing. Because, you know, the model right now is to kind of continue doing what I'm doing, build it so that it can ramp and scale in the realm of doing creative work through music and entertainment. But if at any moment I felt like, you know, we were at a situation where that wasn't cutting it, I'll do anything. I'm not that vain that I'm like, hey, man, if it's not music, I'd rather, you know, go sleep under a box somewhere. I mean, pick up a shovel and do whatever I need to do to make sure that my daughter had food and the lights stayed on. And, you know, to your point, you know, I what my wife does every day, she goes up to her office and she works and she allows me to continue to do what I do. You know, we just monitor it. You know, we monitor it month to month and look at it. And as long as it's still making sense, keep plugging along, kind of waiting the tide, you know.
So where do things stand for you now? You know, do you have a touring and performance schedule set up in some way, or is it tied to the end of the pandemic, or is that just a floating unknown thing to be determined?
It is a floating unknown thing to be determined. Yeah, no, there's not a schedule because there can't be yet. There's hopeful, optimistic dates that are booked into my calendar of things that have been rescheduled, but there's really no rhyme or reason at the moment to put any kind of schedule around it, because for any one date that's in my calendar right now, which has all been moved out of 2020 and copy and pasted somewhere in the realm of the next year, any one of those dates has probably already been moved 3 to 4 times. So when I get a date and somebody says, oh, okay, well, we're going to move it here. And then, you know, a month and a half later, somebody says, oh, you know, yeah, September's not looking, let's do November. And then, you know, a month goes by. Okay, let's look at March 2021. At this point, I put the placeholders in my calendar. I don't know if they're really going to happen or not, right? Yeah. So I'm really hopeful that they are, but I don't know if you can sense in my in my tone that I'm not overly getting my hopes up if it's a live in-person concert, because every state and every city and every venue is operating so differently that there's no way to consistently plan for a tour. Because, you know, based upon how many people can be in the room, or if there's an audience or not an audience, there's so many different things that even putting a band together, because there's musicians I know that are like, hey, man, I don't want to get on an airplane. I don't want to stay in a hotel. So now, like, how far can I travel outside? You know, I can travel about 3 hours from where I am before we go do a show, and I'm awake enough to drive everybody back to Raleigh. So the schedule is a little wonky at the moment. We do have dates in the 2021. Quite a few of them are still virtual in nature. And I'm just hopeful that as we see things, you know, with a vaccine and venues kind of figure out what people are going to want to do and how they're going to be profitable, and, you know, we'll be more comfortable to travel and be more able to put together touring for 2021. But it's, you know, it's an unknown, Court. It's an unknown.
Free floating.
Floating, yes.
Well, let's talk.
Sure. Probably is.
Yeah, whatever. Talk about a couple of things that connect people to you that you have on the web. Like, one thing you were doing at the time this all crashed was a live performance tour called Sounds for Sculpture. And I remember we talked about that back in January 2020. And so people can go to soundsforsculpture.com. The website for it is still up, and get a better idea visually of what that was about. And you can go to the gallery tab and look at it. And on the main page, there are 4 complete tracks. I just checked to make sure they're all still there. And you can listen to songs there. And then you had a thing Christian creatively called the Christian Timbre Quintet. And so, you know, people can go to christiantimbre.com, Christian spelled the usual way, and TAMBURR.com, and see a lot more about Christian and his work. But let's talk, too, about some of the highlights of your career, which we'll resume here again at some point, and was really going great guns for a long time. I mean, I know at one point you were the musical director and pianist for Julio Iglesias, and I'm sure that was a highlight of your career at that point.
Yeah. I was pretty young at that point. I was about 26, 27 years old. And yeah, that was great. You know, I mean, saw the world, and that led to, you know, many other things. You know, I mean, it's interesting, like, now looking back at just the sheer volume of stuff that we've done. And I say we, because, you know, in many cases it's me and many other musicians that make it all kind of be a thing that we go and do. But, it's been quite a journey to get up to this point. And, you know, I feel like, you know, we have some great, I love the Sounds for Sculpture project. We have a lot of interest for people who want to see it, want to hear it. I feel like what we've got on deck is great and represents what I want to be doing. And so I'm very fortunate for the different opportunities that I've been afforded to do and work in this industry. And I love this industry. I know it will come back stronger than before. And I think we'll be ready with the right material to present when that time shows itself.
Yeah, and you're positive, and that's what has made you a successful entrepreneur so far and will again, continuing on through this this debacle here. But so I'll ask you a cliche question, Christian. And again, you've broken so far out of the box of the frustrated, starving artist that I want to ask if there's any advice you can give young musicians who want to have a solid career in the music industry, and especially today when so many things are on hold, you know, and are poised to come back. But what would you tell a young person today who's looking at this and going, my gosh, you know, maybe I should be an accountant?
Oh, well, that's great advice.
That too.
No, you know, I will take the high road and try to give as honest of an answer as I can to keep it without my normal level of snarky sarcasm and humor. But, you know, I think one of the things that I've leveraged so much during this time is, A, the understanding that I need to embrace other elements of this career other than just playing the instrument. And that can be as basic as operating like a recording software, you know, like working on Logic or Pro Tools, where if somebody, even though I can't play live, somebody still might want the music I do. So if I know how to do that from home and I can record that, you know, what do I need to do to learn how to get a good recording of my instrument at home? Like, what kind of microphones do I need? What kind of equipment do I need? The software. I've done more video editing than I ever thought, well, I've ever done in the past 7 months, because, you know, video is what we got, right? We can't go and see anything live. So we're on some sort of YouTube or some sort of video interface on our phones or the computer. And so if you're putting out content now, you've got to understand how to throw things together in iMovie or Final Cut Pro. And so what's silly is, like, you know, I go to record something on the vibraphone or the piano, that might take 10 minutes, but then I might spend 3 hours editing the video and mixing the audio so that it sounds and looks as good as it should. And so I think, I don't know if this is advice or this is just what I've realized it's needed to be done, is that by learning these different trades that kind of accompany being a musician, and learning to realize that they are kind of the lifeline to be able to keep doing what I love to do, which is making music. By being open to that and investing the time and the energy into that, it's been kind of the key to keeping the train moving forward. So I think that's more of just being open to the fact that there are tools out there. If you take the time to learn them and you take the time to figure out how they can benefit you, they can really keep the light going. And that's for me been absolutely critical to keep this moving forward.
Yeah, so I guess what you're saying in a nutshell is that it's a brave new world, and that people in the creative fields need to be more versatile than just doing the core thing that they used to do, playing guitar or drums or whatever it might be. They got to be multi-skilled and multi-talented, and the more skills you can add to your toolbox, the more likely you are to make a living in these fields, and the more, you know, employable you'll be, and the more successful you'll be.
Absolutely.
Well, Christian, I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you being on with us and talking about all these things during this difficult time. And again, to see and hear more about Christian and his work, go to christiantambor.com. Thanks for being on with us, Christian.
Court, thanks so much for thinking of me and reaching out, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you. So thanks again, man.
Yeah, good to talk with you again, too. And thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.